This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with my very special guest today, John Friend, who has a wonderful blog, John Friend's blog. It's a real pleasure to have him back on the show. John, welcome to The Real Deal.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me back. I appreciate it. It's been a while since we last spoke.
Yes. Tell me, what's been the latest on your radar? Have you been following, for example, the Sandy Hook fiasco?
Oh yeah. I've been following it closely since the day it happened. What was it? Friday, December 13th or December 14th, I believe, or something like that.
Yeah, it was December 14th, the shooting.
Yeah. I was following it from the very beginning, and you know, of course, like any major event that's promoted and you know, played up big time in the media, you know, you're always a little bit suspect. You know, you're trying to figure out where the truth is. You know, what really happened. And from the very beginning, I was just, you know, the official story of this alleged shooting, none of it made sense. I mean, maybe we could go through and just talk about all the inconsistencies and the backtracking. I mean, I think they said that the shooter went to the school and then he didn't. This Lanza guy's mom worked at the school. She was a teacher there, and then she wasn't. I mean, there was just so many none of it made sense. I mean, it was totally nonsensical. And, you know, about I guess it was Thursday, the Thursday after, so almost a week afterwards, I wrote a blog post on my blog titled Calling Bullshit on the Sandy Hook Hoax. Because at that point, I was convinced that the entire thing was a complete hoax. It was basically a psyop that was manufactured in the media using scripted actors. That's the conclusion I came to. I don't think that there's any real reason to believe that this shooting ever took place. I don't think that there's any reason to believe that all these children were murdered. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. I'm not sure what your take is on what I just said.
Well, it's fairly stunning, John, but I think there's a lot of reason to believe what you're saying is correct. I mean, the latest article of mine with Dennis Camino is entitled The Nexus of Tyranny, The Strategy Behind Tucson, Aurora, and Sandy Hook, where we explain that Adam Lanza appears to have died the day before on the 13th, that his body appears to have been transported there. Dressed in appropriate garb, that it was multiple TV networks reported only handguns found with the body, the no assault rifle, which was left in the car. They had verified this with federal, state, and local authorities before they broadcast it, that in fact there's a complete absence of EMT, you know, emergency medical technicians rushing to get the bodies to transport them on stretchers and ambulances to a medical facility where they could be pronounced dead or alive. I mean, it's not something that ordinary persons, even EMTs, actually are qualified to make a determination. None of that happened, suggesting it wasn't a real event. Plus, a woman did a survey using satellite research on schools in the vicinity, and schools during the normal school day showed lots of cars and activity, people coming and going, but Sandy Hook not at all. It appeared to be shuttered up. It looks as though it may have been the location for a movie set.
Yeah, this is something that I don't really know exactly how they did it, but I think you might be right, or at least headed in the right direction. I think the more and more I look at it, it seems to be a drill that they were kind of acting out, and then they just presented it in the media as if it were a live event, as if it were actual, you know, reality. I think that's how a lot of these fake events, like these other shootings, and even historical events like the moon landing. I think a lot of the video and some of that stuff was pretty much fake, and you know, they just presented it on television to convince everybody we really went to the moon and did all these great things. So we definitely have a history of the government and media manufacturing events using the public airwaves and getting everybody to believe it, and really distorting our reality to advance their tyrannical political agenda. I mean, on 9/11 is a good example too. I mean, there's so much fakery on 9/11, including many of the victims, and the victims obviously play a huge role in this Sandy Hook hoax, because you know, as soon as especially children, as soon as you introduce victims into these psyops, it's a form of intellectual and psychological violence against the public. because it's so traumatic, and it really hinders their critical thinking abilities and getting them to actually assess this information objectively and find out if what we're being told is actually true, if there's any evidence to support the contentions being made by these, you know, by these police officials, by these, you know, that guy, what was the guy's name? The Wayne Carver, I believe.
Yeah, the medical examiner.
I mean, come on, this guy is on TV on MSNBC, and nothing he's saying makes sense. He can't even answer basic questions about his investigations. He's just a totally bizarre character. Who is this guy? You're telling me this guy is the medical examiner of the state of
Connecticut?
I mean, this is an insult to my intelligence. This is ridiculous.
Well, it's very curious when you juxtapose what he's saying, claiming that all the kids were shot with this Bushmaster, when the studios are reporting no Bushmaster was found with a body, and when he doesn't know how many were boys and how many were girls, and the parents apparently weren't even allowed to see the bodies. I mean, this whole thing just smacks of the surreal.
Yeah, exactly. And that was another thing that really stood out to me. It's like there was absolutely no photographs of any of these dead children, no photographs from the crime scene. In fact, on Monday, the Monday following this alleged shooting, the Huffington Post reported that the Connecticut State Police indefinitely seized all sites connected to this shooting. So they basically totally took over this Sandy Hook school, and also the lands as home, and I don't even know if there was other crime scenes that they seized indefinitely, but I mean they basically seized all the evidence that they're supposed to use to prove to us that this shooting happened and that this one guy murdered 26 people with whatever weapon they're claiming. I mean, they changed the weapon, what, three or four times? So
yeah, it's ridiculous. It's all ridiculous.
I mean, and you know what, Jim? Another thing, I think they do these things. I think they throw out all these absurdities as part of the PSYOP just to keep us guessing, keep us investigating. Because I know they definitely know that there are people like you and I that actually look into this stuff and we try to figure out what's really going on. But they know the vast majority of the people will simply see what's on television and believe it and assume it's legit, especially when they introduce victims as a form of, you know, psychological violence against, you know, in like a traumatic event that, you know, shuts down all critical thought in an individual. Excuse me, I can't even speak.
Yeah.
But no, I think they do these things just to keep us guessing and you know, keep us investigating and arguing and fighting over what, you know what I mean? It's part of the PSYOP, having all these absurd stories and backtracking on one thing and then claiming something else. I'm not sure what you think about that, but that seems to me a part of these operations.
Well, I think they're very much in our face, and you know, I think they are becoming more blatant about it. I mean, this case is really particularly outrageous. There's just no substantiation as to what really happened there. We do have this police radio in real time report of a couple of perps coming toward him, one of whom is subdued. We have police helicopter footage showing another being tracked into the woods, and yet neither of these guys turns out to be identified or booked or held, so we have no idea what's going on there. And Dennis Camino, who's an expert in electronics, has been able to establish that they messed with the Connecticut emergency radio system before Sandy Hook, and he's got quite a bit of extensive stuff there in that article. So I encourage anyone who wants to get the latest scoop on Sandy Hook to go to Veterans Today, Jim Fetzer, or go directly to the article, The Nexus of Tyranny, the strategy behind Tucson, Aurora, and Sandy Hook, and check it out. Dennis did some brilliant work on this.
Yeah, you know, and that actually... I'm curious, what do you think of that? What do you think of these videos of, like, the second shooter being caught in the woods? Because to me, I think that this is basically disinfo to keep people guessing and wondering what really happened. Was there another shooter? I mean, to me, it just seems like it's part of the PSYOP. I don't know what your take is on that. I'm curious.
Well, that's very interesting, John. I'm glad to get your perspective on it. I've heretofore presumed that was actually authentic footage, but you know, there's so much funny business going on here, including you know, photoshopping pictures and you know, this little girl Emily Parker, who's winds up sitting on Barack Obama's leg. I mean, when she's among the dear departed, I mean, the whole thing is a fiasco, if you ask me.
Yeah, and that kind of just you know, goes back to my point where they put out so much conflicting information, so many loose ends to investigate as part of the PSYOP.
Yeah.
To me, anyways, that makes the most sense. Because, I mean, think about it. We have no reason to believe that any of these children were actually murdered. You know, there's no reason to believe that this event took place, especially as it's been presented, with, you know, a single gunman killing 26 children and, you know, nobody's wounded, everybody's dead. I mean, the whole thing is just absurd. It's really just absurd.
Well, you know, as a Marine Corps officer, I qualified with a .45 4 years in a row and also with a rifle sometimes as an expert. And I can't see any way in which you could get that ratio of shots at targets and kills. I mean, there should have been a lot of wounded. There should have been more wounded than dead. And then,
exactly,
as you were mentioning, we have the local paper, The Bee, reporting an interview with a principal about the shooting, and yet it turns out that she's supposed to be the first one who was killed. I mean, the whole thing is so ridiculous from beginning to end.
Yeah, it absolutely is. So I mean, really, when this first happened and I saw that they were, you know, seizing all the evidence and the crime scenes, they weren't going to let the public investigator really provide any proof to demonstrate that this shooting happened the way they say it happened. That was a huge red flag for me. And then shortly after this, you know, I was watching some YouTube clips of some of these alleged family members that had one of their kids murdered in the school.
Yeah.
And I could clearly tell that these people were not genuine. They were fake. They were actors.
Well, Anderson Cooper was allegedly interviewing, you know, the family, and the mother was being coquettish. She was being flirtatious with Anderson Cooper. She wasn't grieving. She wasn't acting the way a mother would who had just lost one of her children. And there
Absolutely.
Are other instances, you know, when the fellow comes up in front of the cameras and has to puff himself up to get in character. I mean, this is all obvious. And then the other guy where the kids were supposedly dropped off. And then we have a late report of one of the little kids saying it was a drill.
Yes, exactly. Well, that one that you were just talking about, I believe the guy's name is Robbie Parker.
Right.
Who was supposed to be the father of Emily Parker, who
right.
I believe was the little blonde girl who was sitting on Obama's lap.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, that was one of the first videos that I noticed that I was like, whoa, this is not real. This guy is a total actor. He basically – and see, another huge red flag was all of the local and state and even federal officials, they all had the same talking points right after the shooting. It was all about gun control. It was about mental health services. You know, you have to have a psychiatric screening to get a gun. And this is absolutely tyrannical. This is basically what the Soviet Union did when they took over and murdered, what, 60 million Eastern Europeans and Russians?
Yeah.
I mean, this is an absolutely tyrannical, out-of-control agenda that is being advanced by this fake event that they basically manufactured in the media. And they use scripted actors to do it.
It looks like that. It does. It looks like they use scripted actors to do it. And
well,
then they have some state law enforcement authorities who are thrown into the mix, and you got this guy who's threatening to prosecute anyone who challenges the official account. How bizarre is that?
Right. Yeah, they're definitely trying to intimidate anybody from using their brain. It's absolutely tyrannical. It's absolutely unacceptable. It's un-American. This is totally un-American, right? You know, this whole agenda. And maybe we can get into that later on in the show. But I think the point about these fake victims and these fake actors, you know, these fake parents of these victims or whatnot, this is such a huge thing to understand. Because, I mean, how could anybody look at a video of Robbie Parker and take this guy seriously? How
Yes.
could any rational person, you know, objectively looking at the situation, watch him being interviewed or watch him give this little presentation and take this guy seriously? It's absurd. It's an insult to our intelligence.
Yes, I agree completely.
Yeah, and I mean, he wasn't the only one. You know, shortly after this happened, I was going over to CNN.com, and you can watch all their videos. You know, they had special coverage of the Sandy Hook event. They all showed up in Newtown, and, you know, they had everything set up with all their big bright lights and their fancy cameras. And they're just going through and interviewing, you know, these alleged victims' family members. And I got to tell you, not a single one seemed genuine to me. None of them did. Excuse me. None of them seemed genuine to me. They all seemed like they were basically, you know, like I said, actors with some sort of talking points or some narrative to promote. And, of course, it was the anti-gun narrative and the pro-mental health, you know, narrative. And then, you know, you look back at an event like 9/11, and you can see the parallels with a lot of the fakery and a lot of these psyop aspects of these events. You can see it with past events. So, I mean, to me, it's really important to understand when we're trying to figure out what is really going on and what the agenda is.
Oh, I think you're completely right. And, you know, I have the feeling that these shootings, you know, they represent an escalating sequence of violence that's supposed to be a replacement for the non-existent domestic terrorist threat. I don't know if you follow this, John, but a subcommittee of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Intelligence has done a study of 680 fusion center reports, where fusion centers bring together federal, state, and local law enforcement to deal with anti-terrorism efforts. And these 680 reports span from 2009 through 2010. And would you believe, in the 680 reports, they found zero evidence of any domestic terrorist threat. None. Nada. Zip. Zilch.
Right.
Zero. Well, I wrote about it. I have an article entitled Fusion and Fear in America, the Non-Existent Terrorist Threat. Everyone listening to the show needs to read that article, because it's simply stunning. So I believe, given there is no domestic terrorist threat, we really don't need Homeland Security. We don't need Homeland Security to have acquired 1.5 billion rounds of hollow point 40 caliber ammunition, which is not even permissible in combat under the Hague Convention of 1899, and which I understand, John, is being transported by Halliburton trucks all over the country, even as you and I are speaking now.
Right. Yeah. I've seen some stuff about that online, and yeah, it's pretty scary. I think more than anything, this sort of stuff is meant to kind of intimidate the public. I mean, you know, that maybe that's me being idealistic, but you know, I hope it would certainly never come to that, where, you know, the police and military are, you know, going after Americans for questioning the government. I hope it would never come to that. But, you know, it's happened in history, so we got to be aware of it and stay vigilant for sure.
With a fantastic draconian gun control measure such as being advocated by, you know, Senator Dianne Feinstein from California, whom I used to think
absolutely
was a very good senator, is so bizarre and so extreme that it's apparently done tremendous damage politically to the Israeli lobby, which she represents. And a good friend of mine has observed that, you know, the reaction has been so stunning, the guns just sailing off the shelf, ammunition being purchased in copious quantity. We have tens of millions of Americans who are now armed that were not previously armed. We have 68-year-old grandmothers going into sporting goods stores and picking up shotguns. I mean, this is just stunning.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
You know, it is a good thing.
Everybody,
it is a good thing.
Everybody needs to be armed. I mean, that's how, you know, that goes to the very heart of what America is and what America is all about, right? I mean, that's the Second Amendment.
Yes.
And you know what? Let me see if I think I have a copy of the Yeah, I do got a copy of the Constitution. Let me just read the Second Amendment real quick if I can find it.
Sure, which has been enormously disputed, and but where there's a history of case law, then interprets the amendment is supporting the right of citizens to keep and bear arms.
Absolutely. Okay, Jesus, it's taking me a minute to find it.
Well,
okay, here it is. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So any form of legislation that is anti-gun in nature is treason. That's what we need to
understand. I think the straightforward reading is that in the time it was written, we had a citizen army where citizens could be called up and constituted, as it were, a reserve force they could be called on to active duty at any time, and therefore they were entitled to maintain weapons that were appropriate there too. But I think in an expanded sense, that the whole nation becomes a reserve force and is entitled to maintain weapons and arms in case they should be called up for the defense of the nation, or, in my opinion, to overthrow a tyrannous government. I mean, after all, we fought an American Revolution to accomplish precisely that goal, and if we have to do that again, well, then so be it.
Absolutely. Very well said. Yeah, I mean the basic point is that any form of gun control is basically treason, according to the Constitution. Now, we know that the government over the past, well, really since its inception, has been slowly eroding the rights of the people, and it's only increased in the past 50, 60 years. And it's really increased after 9/11. I mean, 9/11 was the justification to basically end the Constitution as we know it. And enact this totally tyrannical Homeland Security organization. You know, it's been used to justify all these illegal wars overseas that benefit nobody but Israel and Israeli interests. I think we definitely need to be calling out these people that are promoting this anti-gun agenda, because it is totally un-American, it is totally tyrannical, and it is treason to the United States of America, no doubt.
I think that's exactly right, John, and it's just shocking to me that we've reached this point where even the governor of New York has acknowledged that while the legislature passed this terrible gun control law virtually overnight, that if it had been left up to the public, it would never have happened. Well, what's the responsibility of the government? To be
right.
Unresponsive to the public? Are they supposed to ignore the public's preferences?
Well, that's the whole role of these psyops and these manufactured events. They're used to advance these political agendas that would not be able to go forward without these events.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, this is a huge part of their agenda. They manufacture these events in the media. They basically get everybody to accept it and believe it. And then, you know, they thus advancing their agenda. So that's why we need to definitely call out when we see these fake events on television. You know, we cannot trust anything that's being presented on television anymore.
Because I think that's right. I think that's exactly right.
I mean, it's so easy for them to slip in a fake news clip or whatever, or fake Osama bin Laden's death, for instance. I mean, this is absurd.
And then make whole movies about it, like Zero Dark Thirty. I mean, this is preposterous. Osama died on 15 December 2001. So how can we be attacking him in Pakistan here so recently and killing him again? It's preposterous. It was all political theater.
Well, right, and I believe, haven't you also written about Saddam Hussein and how that whole thing was basically kind of a huge fiasco?
Yes.
I don't know exactly all the details, but, I mean, that's another example. And then also, let's not forget the famous example of the Kuwaiti girl who testified in front of Congress, you know, making all these claims about evil Saddam Hussein doing this and that. And it was she was a total scripted actor.
Well, she was the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador, hadn't been in the hospital, and had been coached by a Republican PR firm. John, we're going to take our first break. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with my very special guest today, John Friend. We're talking about Sandy Hook and other domestic atrocities. We'll be right back.
She's not a girl who misses much. Oh yeah. She's acquainted with the touch of the velvet hand, like a lizard on a window pane. The man in the crowd with the multicolored mirrors on his hobnail boots, lying with his eyes while his hands are busy working overtime. A soap impression of his wife, which he ate and donated to the National Trust. I need a fix, 'cause I'm going down, down to the bits that I left up.
need a fix, cause I'm gone down. Mother Superior jumped the gun. 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 Happiness is a warm gun. Happiness is a warm gun, mama. When I hold you in my arms and I feel my finger on your trigger, I know nobody can do me no harm.
Even Bush admits that Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11. Our own FBI acknowledged it has no hard evidence that ties Osama bin Laden to 9/11. But if Saddam had nothing to do with 9/11, and if Osama had nothing to do with 9/11, then who did it?
Who did it?
The 9/11 conspiracy provides the answer. Discover the big picture. Learn what we know now. Find out what it means. 11 experts contribute to exposing the truth as the anatomy of an atrocity. Edited by James H. Fetzer. Buy it now if you have the courage to face the truth. Just don't think you're going to like it. The 9/11 conspiracy provides the answer.
Veer Radio is listener-supported. We need your donations to pay for live internet streaming radio, our toll-free call-in number, and our website, free MP3 archive links, and interactive forums. RevereRadioNetwork.com and click on the Make a Donation button.
I've got a word or two to say about the things that you do. By all the things that you should. love to do. And go where you're going to. Think for yourself, cause I won't be there with you. Do what you want to do. And go where you're going to. Think for yourself, cause I won't be there with you.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, continuing my conversation with John Friend, assuming he is there. John, are you there? Ooh, John stepped away for a moment. Okay, well, listen, we're going to, he'll be right back. He got a phone call. Listen, I want to say that another academician who has been studying Sandy Hook, in this case from Florida Atlantic University by the name of James Tracy, who happens to offer courses on the university campus about the culture of conspiracy and deals with questions of the ethics of journalism and media coverage and all that, has been subjected to severe attacks on multiple grounds, and where his administration has even raised the question of whether he's done enough to separate his own personal views from those of the administration by publishing, for example, on blogs and being interviewed, including by me. And I find that a bit preposterous. So I wrote an open letter to FAU faculty, staff, and administration about Sandy Hook, which has been published on his blog. You can find it by doing a search on that very title, an open letter to FAU faculty. I want to read a bit of it. All because James Tracy and I have been attacked as faculty members, I am now retired while he is not, for speaking out about Sandy Hook, I would observe that this is a very messy case and that serious questions are being raised about it from a wide range of perspectives. It is clearly complex and controversial, but also falls squarely within Dr. Tracy's areas of professional competence, which include conspiracy theories and culture, malfeasance by the media, and related issues. Tenure was created to protect faculty from the political consequences that might otherwise attend addressing complex and controversial matters of this very kind. I am very surprised by some of the issues being raised because, as is common knowledge within academic institutions, faculty never speak for the institution, which is a role that is the exclusive prerogative of the institution's administration. It would reflect well on FAU if your deans and other representatives of the institution were to defend their faculty when they tackle complex and controversial issues like this one, not imply that they may be doing the institution harm. It would be in the best interest of FAU and the public to stand up for academic freedom and for freedom of inquiry. Not only that, but I have always assumed that public institutions such as FAU stand for truth, knowledge, and justice as this nation's highest values. If that is not the case, then I would suggest they really ought to make it known to prospective students and their parents. Dr. Tracy is simply attempting to sort out the truth from the false about an event that has now become of immense national interest, especially when a major movement is afoot to confiscate semi-automatic weapons from the general population, which is a stunning development contrary to our nation's history. It is, of course, difficult to assess a situation when you know very little about it. There are lots of rumors and speculation, which has even affected the mainstream media. I was astonished at the intensity with which Anderson Cooper of CNN, in particular, took after Dr. Tracy, without knowing the circumstances of the case, apart from the official account, or why Dr. Tracy has the right kind of background and expertise to be addressing these issues in a public forum. When I was attacked in the Duluth News Tribune a few weeks ago, the paper offered me the chance to respond in its Sunday edition, 13 January 2013. Local View, Why the Sandy Hook Shootings Matter, by Jim Fetzer, Duluth News Tribune. When asked whether he believed in conspiracy theories, filmmaker Michael Moore replied, "Only those that are true." The problem is telling the difference. Having spent much of the past 20 years in collaborative research on dark events, the JFK assassination, 9/11, Senator Paul Wellstone's death, Sandy Hook looks to me like part of an escalating series of covert operations designed to promote public hysteria to incite gun control and subvert the Second Amendment. Here are some reasons why. A theory is simply an interpretation of facts in a given case. When the police investigate a crime, they form a theory of the case. In courts of law, prosecutors and defense attorneys usually offer alternative interpretations. With Sandy Hook, figuring out what happened poses special challenges. The facts are not obvious. There were inconsistencies from scratch. The suspect, Adam Lanza, was a student there, then he was not. His mother was a teacher there, then she was not. The principal called the local paper to report the shooting, then she was among the first to die. The coroner reported all the dead were shot with a Bushmaster. Then NBC News reported that four handguns had been found with the body and that the AR-15 had been left in the car. Check out YouTube. Sandy Hook shooting AR-15 rifle was left in the car. Even if Lanza, 20, had done some shooting, the ratio of kills to targets was remarkable. As a Marine Corps officer, I qualified with a 45 4 years in a row and also supervised recruits of his age in their marksmanship training. I don't see how he could have done it. Police radio in real time reported two suspects headed toward the officer calling in, one of whom was apprehended. The other was tracked into the woods, as police helicopter footage shows. We have no idea what became of these suspects. So what happened? Most likely, Adam Lanza and his mother were killed the day before, and with Adam Lanza's body picked up by police. He was attired in a SWAT outfit, including body armor, and stored in the school. I argue a Freeman team entered the school. One was arrested in the school, cuffed and put on the lawn. Two went out a back door. One of them was arrested, and the other apparently escaped. Those arrested currently are not in police custody. Their names were never released. That is a telling sign that we are being sold a story based on fiction rather than fact. Does anything else matter? Most Americans are unaware the Department of Homeland Security has acquired 1.5 billion rounds of 40 caliber hollow point ammunition, which is not even permissible during combat under the Geneva Conventions. A subcommittee of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security has issued a study of 600 reports from fusion centers that integrate federal, state, and local anti-terrorism efforts. It found no evidence of any domestic terrorist activity. The absence of any terrorist threat and the existence of more than 300 FEMA camps and special boxcars carried dissidents to them have been deliberately withheld from the public. Since Homeland Security has no foreign commitments, those camps and ammunition have to be for domestic consumption. Homeland Security appears to be gearing up to conduct a civil war with the American people, but 80 million armed families stand in its way. What better excuse could there be for banning assault weapons and the slaughter of 20 innocent children? Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democrat of California, has a gun control proposal that would lead to the confiscation of virtually every semi-automatic weapon in the nation. That's my interpretation of Sandy Hook. Jim Fetzer reports for Veterans Today and is a McKnight Professor Emeritus at the University of Minnesota Duluth. I recommended that the paper include a list of recommended readings, which it chose not to do. Here was the list I proposed: From America to America, The Endgame by Jim Fetzer with Dennis Camino, Fusion and Fear in America, The Non-Existent Terrorist Threat by John W. Whitehead, Homeland Security, Preparing for Massive Civil War by Paul Joseph Watson and Alexander Higgins, all of which can be accessed by going to Veterans Today, Jim Fetzer. On Sandy Hook specifically, The Sandy Hook Massacre, Unanswered Questions and Missing Information by James Tracy, Sandy Hook, Huge Hoax and Anti-Gun PSYOP by Jim Fetzer, Sandy Hook, Analogies with the London 7-7 Bombings by Nicholas Kohlerstrom. Again, the latter two can be obtained by going to Veterans Today, Jim Fetzer, the former by James Tracy at Global Research. Without studying the case, after all, how could anyone at FAU possibly know whether or not Dr. Tracy is acting responsibly? After even more research I have conducted with Dennis Camino, moreover, the situation is actually even worse, as a far more obvious hoax and fraud than even I had previously surmised. if you're going to read only one article about it, this is the one to read. The Nexus of Tyranny, The Strategy Behind Tucson, Aurora, and Sandy Hook by Dennis Camino with Jim Fetzer. According to the Social Security Death Index, for example, Adam Lanza actually died the day before the shooting. According to ABC, NBC, CBS, only handguns were found with his body. And my co-author, who is an expert in electronics, has discovered the Connecticut Statewide Emergency Radio Network was manipulated before the event. That Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York encouraged the passage of draconian gun laws by the legislature overnight, admitting the public would not have stood for it, reflects how serious this has become. As it happens, I have also done extensive research and publication on complex and controversial issues of comparable interest, including both the assassination of JFK and the atrocities of 9/11. In those cases, as we have with Sandy Hook, what we have been told does not hold up to critical scrutiny. How can academicians contribute to solving problems that the nation confronts if they are being intimidated and cowed by administrators who do not understand the role that the academy should fulfill within the broader context of scholars' obligations and social responsibility? Dr. Tracy deserves your support and admiration, not your condemnation. With appreciation, Jim. James H. Fetzer, Ph.D., McKnight Professor Emeritus, Department of Philosophy, University of Minnesota, Duluth, with a link to my academic webpage. And I must say that the response to the publication of this open letter on James Tracy's blog has been generally very favorable, and I have offered suggestions to him for its publication in the student paper and for its dissemination to the faculty, staff, and administrators at Florida Atlantic University, which I very much hope will come to pass, because there's a crucial role for faculty to play in complex, controversial issues like this, which administrators should be supporting, not discouraging, and standing up for academic freedom and freedom of inquiry, which is something for which tenure was specifically designed. My impression is that John has returned. Are you here, John, friend?
Yes, I am. I'm really sorry about that, Jim.
It worked out just fine because I had this open letter that I was interested in reading, and the fact that you had to take care of other matters gave me the perfect opportunity to do so, so we didn't miss a beat.
Good. Well, I'm glad that you got a chance to read that because I think that's a very, very important letter. I'm really glad that you sent that over there and you showed your support for Dr. Tracy. Because I know he has taken a lot of flack in the media. In fact, I believe Anderson Cooper really went after the guy and was trying to demonize him as some sort of, you know, quote-unquote conspiracy theorist. And I think it's really important that our best minds, especially, you know, academics that have tenure, they should be able to pursue whatever they want. They should be able to pursue whatever intellectual field they're interested in without, you know, without restrictions, without fear of criticism or negative repercussions. I mean, I know you've written also about, you know, scholars not being able to objectively question the Holocaust, the whole Holocaust narrative, and how, you know, there's even laws in Europe that punish people, send them to prison for even questioning the official narrative of this event. So, I mean, this is absolutely tyrannical, and I'm really glad that you were, you know, you're taking a stand in such a bold way.
It is stunning about the Holocaust, and in fact, the more I learn about it, the more doubts that are arising in my mind. There are a couple of very good articles about the Holocaust on Veterans Today now that everyone should access, and I encourage them to do that. I'm going to go there right now and pull one of them up because it's really extremely important.
Sure. Now, I did notice Alan Hart's articles over on Veterans Day about the Holocaust, and I was quite disappointed reading some of the things he had to say. But I understand Veterans Today kind of publishes a wide variety of viewpoints and perspectives. So, but no, yeah, I mean, I think that scholars and especially academics with tenure should be able to absolutely pursue whatever they want and you know develop. Develop their thesis or come to conclusions without fear of punishment or, you know, negative repercussions, whether it's socially, you know, economically, politically even, you know, I mean, people, we need our best minds to freely investigate the most important subjects facing our world. And, you know, when a guy like Dr. Tracy takes a stand on this Sandy Hook hoax, we need to rally behind him and tell him that, you know, this is exactly what he needs to be doing. This is his role in society, is to really question these events and get to the truth and expose it. Because we know the media is not doing that anymore, and they haven't for a long time. So,
well, it's really embarrassing. I mean, there's one extremely good article on veterans today that I'll track down during the break if I haven't found it already. That explains that, you know, toward the end of the war, because the Allies had been bombing all the German cities and destroying the railroad lines and all that, that getting medicine and even food to the prisoners in the concentration camps was a virtual impossibility, that a lot of diseases were sweeping through. Many were dying of dysentery and malaria and related issues. And it was, you know, catastrophic for them, but it wasn't because they were being exterminated by the Nazis as a matter of deliberate genocide. A lot of, you know, gypsies and Jews and the handicapped and all that were, of course, put to death. But it looks as though a lot of that footage, you know, of the starving, emaciated occupants of the prison camps had more to do with circumstances beyond anyone's control than it had to do with a deliberate policy of starvation by the Nazis. And where it appears that a German film, American film director was actually brought in and took a huge amount of footage from which they called a very small percentage to present during the Nuremberg tribunals, and where the victors were very emphatic in punishing the defeated, the Nazis, for crimes, some of which they may have not committed, in fact. So I'm absolutely very, very troubled by a lot of this.
Right, absolutely. Well, first thing I would say is that there's never been any sort of document signed by any top National Socialist official, Hitler, Himmler, any of these guys. There was no official policy to exterminate or genocide any specific group, including Jews. There was no policy to do this. What they were concerned with was removing, you know, the Jews from their society, basically. They definitely wanted to do that. But there was no policy to murder all these people. It's just simply not true. And you're exactly right. The Allies were actually responsible for many of the Jewish deaths in World War II and in some of these concentration camps, because, like you said, they bombed all their supply lines. They weren't able to supply the camps. And then, you know, after the war, well, towards the end of the war and then after, the Germans were actually the ones that suffered the real Holocaust or the real genocide in World War II. You know, the Soviet troops in Eastern Germany and in Eastern Europe in general totally were, you know, brutalized, murdered, tortured millions of German civilians. The Allied generals, including Eisenhower, rounded up millions of German POWs and former soldiers, and they basically perished in these camps that had no running water, no toilets, no washing facilities. You know, a lot of them weren't even fed properly. So, I mean, really, our history has been totally distorted by this one event. And I think it's clear to me, anyways, that this Holocaust story was really one of the first modern day mass psyops on entire populations of people, because really it was. You were mentioning some of the videos that were taken at some of the concentration camps after the war, and how the videos were sort of distorted and presented in a manner which facilitated the Allied political objectives of demonizing the Germans, of punishing the Germans, and really distorting the historical record. I think that's a crucial point to make, and it's so obvious at this point. I mean, there's been so much research done on this alleged Holocaust story. None of it stands up to scrutiny. Just like 9/11, I mean, we were told on 9/11 that all these Muslims attacked America, when in reality Israel and a criminal network of Jews basically carried out 9/11. The same thing applies to the Holocaust. We were told that all these millions of 6 million Jews died, when in fact the opposite is true. Millions of Germans died, not Jews. I think the Red Cross report, which documented all the Jewish deaths in World War II, I think there was something like 120,000 total deaths or something like that. I mean, it was well under even a million. So, I mean, this whole Holocaust narrative is really just a psyop, similar to Sandy Hook and 9/11, or at least there's aspects of it that we could compare and find similarities.
I think that would be a great thing to do. I'd be very pleased for you to do that, John, to pursue that issue.
Yeah, well, I wish I would have prepared a little bit more for that. I've written about this in the past. I actually wrote an article. It's probably one of the most popular articles I've written on my blog. The title of it is "Jew Admits Holocaust, quote unquote, is a fraud and a psyop." And I was basically just highlighting an article in a journal called Inconvenient History,
yeah,
which is like a historical revisionist type magazine.
Yes.
And they published this article where an American Jewish man literally admitted that this Holocaust narrative is basically a psyop, and that the propaganda related to this event has been perpetuated, you know, on through so many different venues, so many different avenues, that it's basically become permanently entrenched in the minds of millions of people.
What I find so profoundly disturbing is that people lose their academic positions. Nick Kullerstrom, for example, has done scientific research on the Holocaust in relation to the use of Zyklon B, and has determined that it cannot have been used the way that the historians are claiming, and that it appears to have been used principally as a disinfectant. I find other sources that tend to support that. That the capacity of the crematoria to, you know, perform the feats that are attributed to it are greatly exaggerated, that the numbers of those who died during the Holocaust have been grossly exaggerated, that there may not have been 6 million Jews in all of Europe at the time.
I
think this is all very disturbing. Why don't you see if you can track that article, John, and we'll spend some time discussing this, because I think it's very important that I've reached the point now where I'm very, very much open-minded that the what's going on here is a form of mythology, another way to, you know, advance the interests of Israelis, especially in this day and age where, you know, that there should be laws against doing research on any subject is, in my opinion, completely preposterous. I mean, if the Holocaust was real, then serious research is going to substantiate it. And if it was not real, then the world is entitled to know. So I cannot find any justification whatsoever for wanting to, you know, isolate and insulate the Holocaust from serious research. Nick Kullerstrom even lost his position at University College London because he had done research on the Holocaust, and a whole encyclopedia of astronomers, a fantastic book, a wonderful compilation involving hundreds of contributors. A reviewer named Swedlow from the University of Chicago suggests the book should be sent back to the publishers in pulp because Nick had done this research, even though he'd been selected by the editors to write the article on Isaac Newton, which was no doubt the most important article in the entire encyclopedia, and no one has faulted his research. None of the contribution to the encyclopedia had anything to do with it. This is the degree of hysteria and irrationality we find out there. I have actually published about this an article entitled ISIS, which is the Journal of the History of Science Society, ISIS, Trips, Stumbles, and Falls. I have another article that research on the Holocaust can be hazardous to your career. I hope that our listeners out there will track down those articles and read them because they're very important about where we stand in the world today. John, we're going to take our second break. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal with my special guest, John Friend. We'll return to talk more about the Holocaust and other issues that are forbidden subjects in some areas of the United States. We'll be right back.
There's nothing you can do that can't be done.
Believe me, John.
There's nothing you can sing that can't be sung.
Sure is.
There's nothing you can say, but you can learn how to play the game.
Johnny.
It's easy.
You're right, boy.
We haven't got anything in the cans.
I'm ready to sing for the world, George, if you just give me the backing.
Blah, blah, blah. Nothing you can sing that can't be sung. Nothing you can say, but you can learn how to play the game. It's easy. Nothing you can make that can't be made. No one you can save that can't be saved. Nothing you can do, but you can learn how to be you in time.
Certainty and considerable scientific authority that the death of JFK was committed by a meticulously executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's lone assassin scenario. A world-class chronology of November 22, 1963. Chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal. Continuing my conversation with Robert Friend, I'm very pleased to have him here today. The article I was talking about that I tracked down is entitled Against Hollywoodism and Revisionism by Professor Robert Faurisson, F-A-U-R-I-S-S-O-N. And for reasons I can't explain, I'm having great difficulty accessing the article on veterans today, even getting to my author's page on Veterans Today. And it would not surprise me if Veterans Today is under some new form of attack, at least in part because of the discussion about the Hollywoodism conference and so forth, including by my colleague Kevin Barrett, who has published some really good stuff here, including an article entitled Iran Drops Bomb on Hollywood, and where he's observing how the Iran has dropped a truth bomb on Hollywood, a multi-megaton truth bomb, the third Hollywoodism conference, during the Farge Film Festival, which brought together 50 authors, scholars, political figures, and filmmakers to oppose and expose Hollywood's war on Islam in general, and the Islamic Republic in particular, where Kevin, of course, himself was one of the participants. He mentions former Senator Mike Gravel, who incidentally sat next to me during the conference, Democratic candidate for president 2008, who observed that Americans are being fed a distorted view of Iran. Quote, everything Iran has done has been entirely within its rights to develop peaceful nuclear energy, Gravel stated at the conference. Merlin Miller, another U.S. presidential candidate who ran with a third position party in 2012, added, the non-existent Iranian bomb is not the real issue. And indeed, it isn't the real issue. The real issue has to do with Hollywood's continuous and ongoing distortion of the issues, which include the fact that Hollywood is completely dominated by individuals who are promoting a Zionist perspective. Hollywood columnist Joel Stein tried to sweeten the bitter pill with an article in which he explained how deeply Jewish is Hollywood. When the studio chiefs took out a full-page ad in the Los Angeles Times a few weeks ago to demand that the Screen Actors Guild settle its contract, the open letter was signed by News Corporation President Peter Cherman, Jewish, Paramount Pictures President Brad Gray, Jewish, Walt Disney Company Chief Executive Robert Iger, Jewish, Sony Pictures Chairman Michael Linton, surprise, Dutch Jew, Warner Brothers Chairman Barry Meyer, Jewish, CBS Corporation Chief Executive Leslie Moonves, so Jewish his great uncle was the first prime minister of Israel, MGM Chairman Harry Sloan, Jewish, and NBC Universal Chief Executive Jeff Zucker, mega-Jewish. If either of the Weinstein brothers had signed, this group would not only have the power to shut down all film production, but to form a minion with enough Fiji water on hand to fill a mikvah. Stein concluded, I don't care if Americans think we're running the news media, Hollywood, Wall Street, or the government. I just care that we get to keep running them. So he doesn't care that, you know, Hollywood is and the news corporations are dominated by Jews. He just wants that to continue. It's just astonishing to me, John, that the American people are not more aware of the fact that this tremendous bias exists in the news media in Hollywood today.
Absolutely. And what's even more incredible is simply quoting a Jewish writer who has openly bragged about the Jewish control of Hollywood and the government and the media and banking. To even bring this up, it is enough to get you totally ostracized and fired from your job and demonized and, you know, called a Nazi and called an anti-Semite. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. These Jews openly brag that they control the media. And as Joel Stein said, Hollywood and the government and everything else. You know, there's another article. Let me just mention real quick. It was also written by another Jewish writer over at the Times of Israel, which is an online Israeli news outlet, and the title of the article, Jim, believe it or not, is Jews Do Control the Media. And this Jewish author basically just goes through and brags that the Jews do in fact control the media. And it's, you know, it's a major accomplishment for them. It's something to be proud of. And yet, if you or I were to say that, you know, we're targeted as anti-Semites or whatever. I mean, it's totally nonsensical. It's totally immature and ridiculous.
And
that's exactly how these people are and always have been.
Well, the Anti-Defamation League has attacked me more than once now for observing that Israel was involved in 9/11. And my response when this first arose, not from the ADL, from other sources, from the very first article I published on these issues entitled 9/11 and the Neocon Agenda, which I presented at a Ron Paul Freedom Rally on the grass in front of the Capitol of the United States on 15 April 2008, was to call for the resignation from office of any political appointees who had joint U.S.-Israeli citizenship, because how could we know that their allegiance to the other state didn't outweigh their allegiance to the United States? And I offered several indications, such as the dancing Israelis and multiple other sources, much of which can be found in the website Israel Did 9/11, All the Proof in the World, where it's wrong to say that Israel alone did 9/11, because there were neocons in the Department of Defense, the U.S. Air Force stand down and all that, that were involved in all of this intimately as well. So it was, you know, the U.S. Department of Defense and the neocons and other U.S. intel agencies that were involved in 9/11 along with the Israelis. But how can explaining, you know, how can be explaining or identifying the role of the Mossad in 9/11 be anti-Semitic? I mean, there's a major distinction to be drawn between the actions and policies of the government of Israel and anti-Semitism, which involves discounting individuals on the basis of their religious belief or their ethnic origins, which I don't believe in whatsoever. I am powerfully anti-Zionist, but I am not anti-Semitic, and I deny the accusation, but I've even published on it, going through these points in detail in an article entitled, Is 9/11 Research Anti-Semitic?, in which I draw just these kinds of distinctions, and yet I found the ADL cited that article and even quoted from it in describing me as an anti-Semitic 9/11 conspiracy theorist, when the content of the very article they cite refutes their allegation.
Well, you know, this word anti-Semite is a totally manufactured word that's just attached to anybody that recognizes truth and that speaks the truth. I mean, it's incredible. You know, they'll call you an anti-Semite for anything. And you know, I think, I think it's totally childish, and I don't even bother with it anymore. I don't care. You can call me an anti-Semite all you want. It's basically a meaningless word that is attached to people who speak the truth and who recognize,
You know, historically, it's a linguistic distinction. It has to do with the Semitic languages of the Middle East, where the Palestinians, for example, are bona fide Semites, but most of the Israelis are not. They immigrated from Russia predominantly. They are not native to the Middle East. They're not actually Semites. So the greatest practitioner of anti-Semitism, ironically, is the state of Israel.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, it's just so ridiculous. You know, even being critical of Israel, you know, for instance, Chuck Hagel, you know, I mean, this guy has basically gone along with everything. You know, he didn't expose 9/11 as being a false flag event. You know, he's gone along with all these wars. And he said one minor critical thing of Israel and mentioned the Jewish lobby, which it's clear there is a Jewish lobby that basically controls the United States government and American politics in general. And look what this guy had to go through. You know, I mean, it's just silly. It's just a way to demonize anybody that thinks critically and independently. It's a way to get everybody to fall in line with the Jewish agenda, because the Jewish agenda always predominates over any other agenda, especially in American politics.
Well, I want to talk a bit more about this article against Hollywoodism, revisionism by Robert Frasson, because he includes Hollywood, and this is paragraphs from his article, Hollywood, along with British cinema and Soviet propaganda, had a terrible and direct responsibility, both in the lies attending what was called the discovery of the German Nazi concentration camps, 1945, and the ignoble lynching party. The phrase is that of Harlan Fiske Stone, Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court at the time. There was the Nuremberg trial of 1945-46. where the winners of the war in coalition made themselves the judges and jury to try the defeated. It's altogether true that in 1945, even a privileged concentration camp like that of Bergen-Belsen offered a nightmarish vision. But the horrors discovered there were not created by the Germans. They were due to the war, and in particular an air war conducted mercilessly to the end by the Allies against civilians. It took a fine cynicism to show those horrors and point an accusing finger at the defeated, when the ones mainly responsible were the U.S. Air Force and the Royal Air Force. In April 1945, no longer able to manage, the commandant of Bergen-Belsen, SS Captain Joseph Kramer, sent some men to meet the advancing troops of British Marshal Montgomery and warned them that they were approaching a terrible den of infection, that they should not immediately release the prisoners lest they contaminate the civilian population and the British soldiers. The British agreed to work with the Wehrmacht on the site. They kept the detainees there and tried to treat them, but mortality remained appallingly high for a long time. The British wanted to know how many inmates were buried in the mass graves. They extracted the corpses and counted them, then using a bulldozer, a British officer pushed the bodies towards six large ditches where the soldiers forced female SS guards to cast them in with their bare hands. But this reality was soon transformed by the film propaganda services, which had people believe that the bodies were those of people killed in an alleged extermination program. He continues, a photograph taken from a plane and showing the bulldozer from afar made it possible to convey the impression that the vehicle was driven by a German soldier performing his daily work as an employee of a death factory. In one case, a photo taken from up close showed the bottom of the machine pushing corpses, but beheaded the driver so that with him not appearing as a Briton, it was reckoned he was a German. The Americans went on to make more and more falsifications of this kind. The American General Eisenhower, Supreme Allied Commander, was the impresario of this intensified Hollywoodism. The famous Hollywood film director George C. Stevens was brought to Germany in the uniform of a lieutenant colonel. His team shot 80,000 feet of film, from which 6,000 feet, or 7.5% of the total, were selected for General William Donovan, special assistant to the U.S. Chief of Counsel at Nuremberg. It was those parts, carefully selected by the American prosecutor, which on November 29, 1945, practically at the lifting of the curtain of the loathsome Nuremberg trial, were projected to a stupefied world. Some of the German defendants, most disturbed at what they saw, deduced that Hitler had carried out a gigantic crime behind their backs. In this sense, it can be said that the Nuremberg trial marked the triumph of Hollywoodism. This is really shocking stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, it just goes to show that, you know, the psychological operations, these aspects of these psychological operations have been used going all the way back to this alleged Holocaust. You know, they used images and videos to convey a false message and manufacture a false reality to suit their political agenda, right? I mean, that's what they did with the Holocaust. That's what they did with 9/11, Sandy Hook, and countless other events, you know, to more or less, you know, different scales, obviously. But, I mean, yeah, it's absolutely right. You know, they made all these videos and all these photos and took all these photos and presented them in a way which would lead the person to believe that the Germans actually did this, when in reality that was not at all what happened. So, you know, I have a quote here from Hitler, and I know Hitler is a very, very demonized man, and that's largely because he understood who the Jews were and what their agenda was and what they had done throughout history. And he actually describes the big lie technique. And I have a quote here. He says, "In the big lie, there is always a certain force of credibility, because the broad masses of a nation are always more easily corrupted in the deeper strata of their emotional nature than consciously or voluntarily. It would never come into their heads to fabricate colossal untruths, and they would never believe that others could have the impudence to distort the truth so infamously. The Jews have known better than any others how falsehood and calamity can be exploited." And I mean, I think that basically exactly describes, well, you know, how they use this big lie technique and these psyops to distort reality and to perpetuate their narrative, which suits their agenda.
Here's a continuation of this article about Hollywoodism's part in creating the myth of the Holocaust. The Holocaust of the Jews then became a sort of religion whose three main components are the extermination, the gas chambers, and the 6 million martyrs. According to an article of faith of this religion, Hitler ordered and planned the methodical slaughter of all European Jews. In so doing, he committed a crime without precedent, a specific crime later called genocide. Then, in order to commit this specific crime, he had a specific weapon developed, a weapon of mass destruction, the gas chamber, operating especially with a powerful insecticide, Zyklon B, whose active ingredient was hydrogen cyanide. Finally, the result of this enormous crime was the death of 6 million European Jews. The Auschwitz-Birkenau camp was a focal point, the apogee, the Golgotha of that horror. After the war, a whole propaganda developed around this holy trinity of the Holocaust, the whole industry of the Holocaust, the whole business, the Shoah business. In the United States, the film industry has fed on this belief and spread it throughout the Western world. It is especially since 1978 that such propaganda has been developed, particularly with the four episodes of the U.S. miniseries Holocaust, recounting the saga of the Weiss family. It's no exaggeration to say that the showing of that series became, as of 1979, practically mandatory in an entire portion of the world. It triggered a torrent of films, including by Steven Spielberg, Schindler's List, by Roberto Benigni, Life is Beautiful, by Roman Polanski, The Pianist, in France in 1985. Claude Lanzmann honored us with a documentary running for over 9 hours, Shoah. The number of Emmy Awards, Oscars, and other prizes given to films like these is staggering. A mogul of the entertainment industry, Andrew Wallenstein, once stated in The Hollywood Reporter, let's just say it, the real reason we saw many of these movies is that they're awards bait. It is such observation that had given rise to the saying, there's no business like Shoah business, inspired by the refrain of the song sung by Liza Minnelli, among others, there's no business like show business. I think this is right, really. It corresponds with my understanding from the perspective I share today of what's been going on in Hollywood. And, you know, this is the sort of thing of which Americans need to be made aware, that there's a whole other side of this Holocaust business, and where the very existence of, you know, thought crimes, that you cannot even investigate the Holocaust without running the risk of prosecution and punishment in many nations of the world, is to be completely and utterly shocking, totally irresponsible, and intellectually indefensible.
Oh yeah, well, it's the most tyrannical agenda out there, in my view. You know, anybody trying to stifle free speech and free debate and free historical inquiry, you know, this is total tyranny. It's unacceptable, and like I said, it's totally un-American. Jim, let me correct myself. I think earlier in the show I said that the Red Cross report reported that only like 120,000 Jews actually died. I'm looking at the report right here. They found that between 270 and 300,000 registered inmates of all nationalities died in German work camps over the entire course of the war. And this is a 1946 Red Cross report. So this 6 million number is totally fantasy.
If the Red Cross report is accurate, then it's a total fantasy, a fabrication, a fraud.
Right, exactly. And I already mentioned that there was never any policy, there was never any document signed by any top official in the German government to implement any sort of policy to exterminate Jews or gypsies or anybody else. It's just not – there's no proof of it. There's no documentation. There was never even statements made to that effect. So this entire narrative is totally manufactured. And getting back to that, the role of victims and these alleged survivors in perpetuating the PSYOP, this fake event, you can see the parallels between, you know, with Sandy Hook and with 9/11, how the roles of these alleged victims and survivors are very important in perpetuating these myths and engaging in these psychological operations.
Yeah, it's absolutely stunning, stunning, stunning stuff. I agree. Once you begin to see, once the scales are torn from your eyes, you know, once you begin to see what's going on and how much of what we're told about history is a fabrication, just lies, deception, deceit, Right. It's shocking. I mean, JFK may have been the pinnacle because, I mean, here they assassinate a president of the United States in front of hundreds of witnesses in a public city in the middle of the day. They steal the body in defiance of the law. They secretly transport it to Walter Reed, where the leading forensic pathologists in the military remove bullet slugs. They deliver it in a body bag in a black hearse to the back of Bethesda Naval Hospital. All the while, the ceremonial bronze casket in which it's presumed to abide is being lowered from the Air Force One and loaded into a gray Navy ambulance with Jackie Kennedy in attendance, and a huge entourage makes its way to Bethesda Naval Hospital, where Gerald Custer, the radiation technician who actually took the x-rays of JFK, is proceeding upstairs, x-rays in hand, exposed but not yet developed, and looks out to see this huge entourage with Jackie Kennedy entering the building. And it crosses his mind, what in the world is going on here? Because the body is already in the morgue and the autopsy is already underway.
Right, exactly. And even with the JFK case, we have multiple examples of evidence being fabricated or altered. I know you've talked about some of the autopsy photographs being altered. Even the man's organs, wasn't his brain switched or something? I don't know all the details.
Well, there was the substitution of another brain was substituted for that of JFK, because after they altered the x-ray by patching a massive blowout at the back of his head, there was no place for his brains to go. They substituted another man's brains in diagrams and photographs, and it's a virtually completely intact brain, which couldn't possibly be the brain of JFK. As a world authority, Robert B. Livingston, M.D., concluded when he studied the reports of extruding cerebral and cerebellar tissue from the Parkland physicians who observed this fist-sized hole at the back of his head, and noted that in the diagrams and photographs of the brain, there's a completely intact cerebellum, and most, he had lost about a half of his brain in Dealey Plaza, and yet this is a virtually completely intact brain. Plus, of course, then they altered the Zapruder film. The whole movie's the assassination to conceal the fact that the driver brought the limousine to a halt to make sure the man would be killed, that he was shot twice during that interval. Once in the back of the head, fell forward. Jackie eased him back up, was looking him right in the face when he was hit in the right temple by a frangible or exploding bullet that set up shockwaves that blew his brains out to the left rear with such force that Officer Bobby Hargis, riding there when impacted with the debris, believed he himself had been shot. It's absolutely stunning, and that's only one of more than 15 indications we have of Secret Service complicity in setting him up for the hit, which include that Roy Kellerman, who was in charge of the presidential vehicle, took the autopsy photographs and x-rays from Bethesda, and the next time they turn up, they've been altered, fabricated, and faked.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have countless examples of, these big-time events where the government is faking evidence, manufacturing videos, altering photos, altering evidence, intimidating witnesses, planting scripted witnesses to sell their agenda. I mean, this is a really important aspect to understand when we're looking at any event. And it's just amazing that more and more people aren't catching up on this and realizing that we're really being duped on a lot of this stuff.
Well, I'm really shocked now as I'm beginning to appreciate the profundity of the deception that is called the Holocaust. I mean, it's really, really sinking into me the enormity of this historical deceit and the fact that virtually the entire establishment has been brainwashed into believing in its reality, which has been massively reinforced by Hollywood, which is completely dominated by a special interest that wants to promote the myth of the Holocaust. I'm just shocked. Shocked.
Let me mention three sources. One is a book by Victor Thorne, and he wrote a book called The Holocaust Hoax Exposed, Debunking the 20th Century's Biggest Lie. And he literally goes through it's a very short, concise book. You could read it in an evening if you really wanted to. It's not very long, but I mean, he just goes through and totally debunks virtually every aspect of the official Holocaust narrative.
What was the title of that book again?
It's titled The Holocaust Hoax Exposed.
The Holocaust Hoax Exposed, okay.
Right. And there was another book that's a little bit older. Well, it's actually much older. It's called The Hoax of the 20th Century, The Case Against the Presumed Extermination of European Jewry. And it was written by a man named Arthur Butts. And these are two great sources. I mean, there's countless of other sources available online or, you know, in book form. And getting back to the
John, hold that thought. We got to take our final break. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal with my special guest, John Friend, here. We're talking about a host of issues, Hollywoodism, the use of films to promote a false agenda, historical myths, including 9/11 and even the Holocaust. We'll be right back.
When you're listening late at night, you may think the band are not quite right, but they are, they just play like that. It doesn't really matter what chords I play, what words I say, or time of day. It is as it's only a long song. There's nobody there.
Stem cell research, abortion, cloning, evolution, creation science, intelligent design. These are hot button issues today. Religion and science, morality and government, corporations and fascism. If you want to know what's happening to this nation this very day, then you won't want to miss Render Unto Darwin. After 35 years of teaching logic, critical thinking, and scientific reasoning, Jim Fetzer offers a critique of the Christian Rights Crusade against science. If you want to understand the issues, if you want to be informed, this is a book you won't want to miss. Render Unto Darwin, at Amazon.com and the major bookstores. render unto Darwin.
The movie's gonna make me a big star, 'cause I can play the part so well. Well, I hope you'll come and see me in the movie. Then I'll know that you will plainly see the biggest fool that ever hit the big time. And all I gotta do is act naturally. You can never tell. The movie's gonna make me a big star, 'cause I can play the part so well. Well, I hope you'll come and see me in the movie. Then I'll know that you will plainly see the biggest fool that ever hit the big time.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, concluding my conversation with John Friend here. I remind you that he has a blog, John Friend's blog, which I regard as excellent, and there's a great deal there to be learned, and I recommend it highly. John, tell us what you think is most important about our discussion, where we should go from here.
Well, thanks, Jim. I appreciate that compliment about my blog. And I thought, you know, I think it's really important to really emphasize the role of, you know, victims or, you know, family members in some of these PSYOP events like the Holocaust, like 9/11, and like Sandy Hook especially. I think it's really obvious with Sandy Hook. The role of these victims and these scripted actors in perpetuating these myths and you know, engaging in these psychological operations is where it all comes from. I mean, they are the main weapons used in these PSYOPs. And there's a video you can watch on YouTube. It's called The Last Days of the Big Lie. And it was made by a guy, I believe his name is Eric Hunt, off the top of my head. And he basically went through and he seriously investigated all the claims that were made by a lot of these alleged Holocaust survivors. And he found that all of their stories were totally bogus and nonsensical, and they were basically just making stuff up. And I think I think that's clear. I also did a blog post titled "Holohoax and 9/11 Actors: Liars and Fraudsters Perpetuate the Big Lies of History." And this I did this back in April of last year. And I think it's really important for people to go take a look at that and watch some of these videos. Because what I did was I basically explained that the Holohoax and 9/11 really are the big lies of, well, you know, the Holocaust narrative is the big lie of the 20th century, and then 9/11 is really the big lie of the 21st century, at least thus far. We're only, what, 13 years in?
Yes.
Who knows what they're going to do down the road
here? Yes.
But, I mean, these events are just such colossal lies, and the official story of both of these events is almost literally the exact opposite of what happened. And I go through here in this blog post, and I just highlight a few examples of some of these alleged Holocaust survivors, and just showing that they're totally fake and they're lying. You know, their testimony does not stand up to scrutiny. Some of them have been even caught in their lies and had to admit that they were lying. The very first video I got here is, I believe it's a gentleman up in Canada, and he had this incredibly, you know, sobby story that really played on people's emotions, you know, about him meeting his wife and enduring all these hardships at the hands of the Germans in World War II and whatnot. And it turned out his entire story was completely made up. And there really are countless examples of this. And we even see this with 9/11 and with Sandy Hook.
Yes, 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 so, we do.
But yeah, I mean, if you're not familiar with that video, I would really encourage everybody to go through and...
Repeat the title of it again.
It's called The Last Days of the Big Lie.
The Last Days of the Big Lie.
Yeah, and what the guy does, he basically analyzes... Steven Spielberg did a documentary, I believe it was for the Shoah Foundation or some other Holocaust-related organization, where he interviewed all these alleged Holocaust survivors and victims and whatnot. And what this guy does in this documentary, The Last Days of the Big Lie, is he just goes through and shows how completely ridiculous their claims are. And he just goes through and shows that... they're basically liars, and they're basically actors selling a scripted story to advance this Holocaust narrative. We saw the same thing on 9/11. I mean, last time I was on your show, I brought up the, you know, the guy that was in New York, the Harley shirt guy.
Yeah.
Where he's basically right there in New York. You know,
oh, Humphreys. Is that his name?
Right, yeah. I believe... I can't even remember. Oh, Mark Walsh, I believe, was a guy.
Mark Humphreys.
Or Mark Humphreys. Yeah, it was something like that.
Humphreys. Paul Humphreys actually is a friend of mine. Yeah, Mark Humphreys.
Yeah, it wasn't your friend, was it?
No, not my friend.
Well, I'd imagine most people listening to your show are probably familiar with this guy, but for those who aren't, you know, here was a guy that was interviewed on what we were told was live television on...
Right.
I think it was basically staged.
Everyone's scratching their head trying to figure out what in the world's caused these two monster buildings to have, as it were, disintegrated before our very eyes. And he just pops up with a complete explanation. He says it must have been the intense heat from the fire from the jet fuel that caused the steel to weaken or melt that led to a pancake collapse. Now, none of that actually turns out to be authentic. The jet fuel wouldn't have burned hot enough or long enough. It couldn't have caused the steel to weaken. If it had, it would have been asymmetrically distributed. There would have been some sagging and tilting, but no complete, total, and abrupt collapse. The buildings didn't collapse, in fact. They were blown apart in every direction. They were converted into millions of cubic yards of very fine dust, and when it was over, there was no stack of pancakes, as would have been the case had this been any kind of a collapse. So he's just making it all up, but he's right there on the spot, on the scene, at exactly the right time to be interviewed to convey this impression to the world.
Right, but to convey this message to a very traumatized world, because, you know, they were endlessly showing the videos of this fake plane, you know, this fake video of a plane, you know, which we were told was filled with innocent Americans crashing into this building. And I think it's pretty clear at this point, all of the videos showing an airplane crashing into the World Trade Center towers are fake. In my view, and based on some of the research I've seen, September Clues is a great source. And I don't know if you'd go this far and agree with what I just said, Jim, but I think it's pretty clear that almost all of the videos of the planes hitting the buildings are fake.
Well, listen, none of the four crash sites were legitimate. Two of the planes weren't even in the air that day, 11 and 77. The other two were in the air but were at distant locations. For example, Flight 93 was over Champaign, Urbana, Illinois after it had allegedly crashed in Shanksville. Flight 175 was over Harrisburg and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania after it allegedly hit the South Tower. None of those four planes actually crashed on 9/11. That means none of the passengers allegedly aboard them died during plane crashes, which means there were no hijackings of airplanes that caused them to crash by 19 Islamic terrorists. I mean, the whole story is a fraud. The question then becomes, how did they fake the impression of planes hitting the Twin Towers? My present view is it was done using the images of planes so that we have authentic video of a fake plane, the image of a plane that was actually a hologram projected from another plane that was 1,400 feet to its side that we saw hitting the North and also the South Towers. That's my present view. I know Simon Shack and others take a more strong, you know, interpretation, but to the best of my knowledge at this point in time, that is what appears to be the best founded explanation I can provide.
Right, and you might be right. I mean, I don't know. You know, you guys are probably better judges than I am. But I mean, by the way, I think it would be great if you could interview Simon Shack. I'm not sure if you have any.
Well, I've invited him before. I also invited him to speak in Vancouver, but he declined. And for
I see.
But if you wanted to make the overture, tell him I'd be glad to feature him on the show if he'd be willing to come on.
Yeah, you know, I don't have any contact with him either, but I think that would be good if he could get on your show. But anyways, I think basically it's clear that maybe not all, but many of the videos we were shown on 9/11 were fake.
I call it video fakery to have a real videos of a fake plane. I mean, that's a form of video fakery. Any use of videos to convey a false impression qualifies as video fakery as I would define it.
Exactly, and it's really tough to figure out exactly how they do these things, but I mean, it's clear that they are basically faking stuff and presenting it on television as if it were real. So it's very dangerous. And actually, I was going to bring this up too. This was an article that I found actually over on Killtown's blog a while ago. He did that article, why they didn't use planes to hit the World Trade Center towers. And it was kind of one of the first quote-unquote.
It's a brilliant, brilliant work. Yeah,
it's great.
Why they couldn't use real planes.
Exactly. Yeah. It was a good article, and it really.
Well, there are basically three reasons. I mean, real planes would have difficulty hitting the target. Pilots tried to do it with simulators, and I think one time out of like 100, they were able to do it. So it would be difficult. Now, you could have some kind of sensor that might lead a plane to hit the building, but then the plane enters the building effortlessly in violation of Newton's laws. Now, the trick was they had to get the plane all the way into the building before it exploded to create a pseudo-justification or explanation for the collapse of the buildings, which we know did not take place. But they also had to coordinate it in time with these explosions in the sub-basement, one of which was witnessed by Willie Rodriguez, which were intended to drain the sprinkler system of water so they couldn't extinguish the very modest fires that remained after the stored fuel supply had been consumed in those spectacular fireballs that only lasted for 10 or 15 seconds. So they made a mistake because they actually had the explosions and the sub-basements went off 14 and 17 seconds before the alleged impacts of the plane. So they got that botched. Gordon Ross and Craig Furlong had done brilliant work on this in their article entitled Seismic Proof, 9/11 Was an Inside Job.
Right, yeah, exactly.
They were wanting to explain, you see, the explosion of the sub-basement by jet fuel falling through the elevator shaft. That was implausible in the first instance because the main elevators were staggered. Every 30 floors you'd have to get off and go on to another. But there were a couple that went all the way from top to bottom. One of Willie's co-custodians was in one of them, and he survived, which would not have been the case had the jet fuel fallen through and exploded. So.
Right, exactly. Yeah, those are all good points. But getting back to that article that Killtown wrote, he cited an article written by Professor George J. Stein.
Okay.
It was a 1995 essay titled Information Warfare. And I actually used a good excerpt of this article in my post, Calling Bullshit on the Sandy Hook Hoax, that I posted roughly 5 or 6 days after this fake shooting event.
Okay.
And I used it to kind of demonstrate that these people were, you know, the military-industrial complex and even academics were preparing to use information warfare and psychological operations on a massive scale. And it's a really, really revealing article. I'm not sure if you've read it. I know I've mentioned it to you a couple times. Let me just read a little excerpt of it.
Sure, please do.
He says here, a major new factor in information war is the worldwide infosphere of television and broadcast news. Information warfare at the strategic level is the battle off the battlefield to shape the political context of the conflict. And then he goes on to say, let's see, this media-created universe we live in is fictive rather than fictional, because although what we see on CNN is true, quote-unquote, it is just not the whole, relevant, or contextual truth. Nevertheless, this fictive universe becomes the politically relevant universe in which the government or the armed forces are supposed to, quote-unquote, do something. And I could go on here. There's just a couple more.
Go ahead.
He goes on to say, fictive or fictional operational environments, then, whether mass-targeted or niche-targeted, can be generated, transmitted, distributed, or broadcast by governments or all sorts of players through increasingly diversified networks. Let us take just one example of how current technologies could be used for strategic-level information warfare. If the capabilities of already well-known Hollywood technologies to simulate reality were added to our arsenal, a genuinely revolutionary new form of warfare would become possible. Today, the techniques of combining live actors with computer-generated video graphics can easily create a quote-unquote virtual news conference, summit meeting, or perhaps even a battle that would exist in effect, though not in physical fact. Apply that to a fake assassination of Osama bin Laden, or a fake video of a plane striking the World Trade Center, or a fake video of a victim of the Sandy Hook shooter. You know, I mean, we could apply this to all these situations, and it's perfect. It totally describes how they do these things.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's exactly right. That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's really a revealing article. And then, this is what convinced me about this media fakery stuff. Because it is a little bit complex and confusing, you know, when you're first looking into this stuff. But as soon as I read this, I was like, wow, this really makes a lot of sense here. And it really shows you how dangerous the mass media and this mass entertainment system really is.
Why don't you repeat that last paragraph or two about how it works within this fictional environment?
Okay, let me see if I can find that. Okay, he says here, if the capabilities of already well-known Hollywood technologies to simulate reality were added to our arsenal, which we know they already have these in their arsenal, he says, a genuinely revolutionary new form of warfare would become possible. Today, the techniques of combining live actors with computer-generated video graphics can easily create a virtual news conference, summit meeting, or perhaps even a battle that would exist in effect, though not in physical fact.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. Combining scripted actors with fake images or fake videos presented to the public as if it were a real event. It was live happening.
Yes.
I mean, this is exactly what they do, whether we're talking about Sandy Hook, 9/11, this Holocaust fraud. I mean, these aspects are utilized in all these PSYOP events.
I think that's exactly right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's incredible. And that's why the television is so dangerous, because we literally cannot accept anything at face value. It's probably their greatest weapon in their arsenal, because if they can control the narrative, if they can control how we think, if they can control our reality by distorting it and faking our reality just to advance their agenda, then, you know, we need to break out of this. We need to break out of this fake reality that's presented in the television and on news coverage. You know, Jim, I actually sent you a link to a YouTube video before the show started, and there's a guy that I've subscribed to his YouTube channel for a while now. His name is Dave J, I believe, and he just did a video claiming that this Chris Dorner guy, who's this rogue LAPD cop, he's claiming that this whole thing is fake, and he may be right. I mean, we just can't trust anything that's being presented in the television, because if you look at this story, it perfectly advances the government's agenda, especially using drones on American soil to attack American citizens.
Yeah, yeah. The title is XLAPD. Christopher Dorner's story is 100% hoax for those who want to find it without having the URL. And it's only 3.5 minutes long. I'm sorry I didn't have a chance to watch it before the show.
No, it's okay. To be honest with you, I'm not saying that this guy has it right. I simply don't know. I haven't really even looked into this whole situation.
It wouldn't be surprising.
Exactly. I don't doubt it. That's my point. I wouldn't be surprised if he was right and this whole thing is just a big fake event. But see, that's why it's so tough. You know, we really can't take what these people say at face value.
Can you repeat what you just said? We had a little static on our line right then.
Oh, no. I was just saying we really cannot believe anything that's being presented on the television, especially in the news.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, and all the networks are controlled. And, you know, I mean, William Colby told us that the agency owns, former director of the CIA told us the agency owns everyone of significance in the major media. We got to take that at face value. And Bill Casey, Reagan's campaign manager, arranged with the Iranians to hold the hostages back until after the inauguration to ensure Jimmy Carter wouldn't be reelected. When appointed director told his agency members that the CIA's disinformation campaign will be a success when everything the American people believe is false.
Right. Yeah, that's a great quote. And that pretty much explains exactly what's happened. I mean, it is so difficult to figure out what the heck is going on anymore. It takes a lot of work, and if you don't have the understanding that, you know, for instance, 9/11 was not as they say, you know, if you haven't already taken the red pill, so to speak, it becomes increasingly difficult to figure out what is really going on. And that's why it's so dangerous. You know, I have a quote here from Aldous Huxley, who's the guy who wrote
Brave New World.
Brave New World, yeah. And this was a quote from 1961. He was warning us what would happen in the future. And he said this at the Tavistock, or I'm sorry, yeah, he said it at the California Medical School back in 1961. He says here, there will be, in the next generation or so, a pharmacological method of making people love their servitude and producing dictatorship without tears, so to speak. Producing a kind of painless concentration camp for entire societies so that people will in fact have their liberties taken away from them, but will rather enjoy it because they will be distracted from any desire to rebel by propaganda or brainwashing enhanced by pharmacological methods. And this seems to be the final revolution, and that's exactly what they've accomplished. At least by and large. I mean, there's still guys like me and you that aren't believing everything, and you know, we're not totally poisoned by these pharmaceutical drugs and this disgusting food that they, you know, that they give us here in the supermarket and whatnot. But I mean, that's basically what they've done through their control of the media and, you know, the pharmacological industry.
Fairly astounding, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really incredible, and I think we need to recognize that the main weapon is their ability to control the debate, spin the narrative, you know, control the information, and distort our reality using their control of the media. And it's really astounding that people, you know, simply cannot grasp this, and you know, they go on attacks and call people like me and you kooky and conspiracy theorists and whatnot because we don't believe, for instance, the Sandy Hook narrative. You know, it's just incredible people are still doing this. And I'm referring specifically to Michael Collins Piper and Mark Glenn. I listened to one of their radio shows, and they were going on and on about how people that are saying the Sandy Hook hoax is disinfo, and they're really destroying any credibility we have with the 9/11 truth movement. And it's just ridiculous. It's immature.
What's wrong with them? How have they missed Sandy Hook? How could they believe it was real?
Well, that's what I don't get. I mean, I really don't understand it.
To me, this is discrediting of them, not of those of us who have exposed the hoax.
Absolutely. I think you're exactly right. And I don't mean this in a malicious manner. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, if you pull up Robbie Parker and watch that video, and you really think that this guy is a genuine father of a child that was just murdered, you are being played for a fool because it's not true. This guy is clearly an actor. And there's countless examples of this. It's not like it was this one video. I mean, you can go on YouTube and find all sorts of videos of these people that are claiming to be family members of these little children, and they're clearly actors. They're not genuine. They're not even upset. They're not even crying. Jim, I'm sure you've seen the guy Gene Rosen.
Yes.
I mean, this guy is another blatant example of one of these actors perpetuating the Sandy Hook myth. I mean, it's absolutely it's insulting to our intelligence.
John, I just want to encourage everyone to get out there and study Sandy Hook. It's really serious. There are at least five articles about Sandy Hook on my website. If you go to Veterans Today, Jim Fetzer, which I've been unable to access during the show, suggesting to me Veterans Today may be under some kind of cyber attack, which would be very unsurprising. John, tell us about your blog again once more and what you would recommend people look for.
Yeah, if you go to my blog, it's johnfriendsblog.blogspot.com. I have tons of links to all sorts of interesting stuff on the left and right-hand side of the page. I also host my own radio show on the Truth Militia Radio Network on Monday evenings at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I deal with a lot of historical issues, political philosophy, and history in general.
John, I can't thank you enough for being here. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, thanking my special guest, John Friend, for his contributions to this conversation and all of you for listening.
Equal to the